Each and every one of us as human beings is born into a cultural system bounded by the mores that keep us culturally aligned. The way we comport ourselves is dictated, in some measure, by the customs we have developed culturally over the span of centuries or even millennia. Each of us is also deeply affected by the nature of the habitat of our birth and lifespan, during which we adapt to the collective point of view dictated by our cultural practices within our respective environments. Just as watersheds are separated by the geophysical nature of terrain, so are our cultures separated by cultural boundaries imposed through the human generations. For the lore of the land, this is Jack Leffler. The Sonoran Desert of what is now southern Arizona and northwestern Mexico is regarded as the most luxuriant desert in North America. It is characterized by several species of columnar cactus, as well as palo verde, mesquite, and ironwood trees, and other species of vegetation. Wildlife is abundant. It is here that the Tohono O'odham, formerly known to outsiders as the Papago Indians, have lived for many generations. When humans first entered this region over 10,000 years ago, the last great ice age was still upon the planet, and what is now Sonoran Desert was grassland spotted with pinon and juniper trees. Through the millennia, humans continued to adapt to this ever-changing habitat until today the Tohono O'odham can truly be considered an integral part of this environment, one of many species who belong here. My old friend Camilus Lopez is a traditional O'odham who clearly recognizes the sacred nature of his homeland.
In O'odham culture, every mountain is sacred. Every mountain has its story. When you share a song about that mountain, you know, you don't say it any better than in other mountains. There's no levels, no degrees to more sacred or less sacred. He said every mountain, every little sand, every wash is sacred. It has a story behind it. That's why it was made. If there was no reason for it to be there, it wouldn't have been made. So every mountain has the sacredness, its reason for being.
In the culture, the frogs are they're medicine people. They bring rain. A sign of a frog is a good sign because, you know, that means rain. In the desert culture where you live, it's hot and, you know, you see frog, that's a sign of it's rain, gonna rain, or rain has been here. And so it's always been where the frogs are highly regarded for bringing rain or for being great medicine for rain. When we went to the mountain there, Babatutuak, there's a lot of different kind of frogs there. And when they used to pray for rain, if rain didn't come for a long time, a lot of times they would send someone who was a medicine person or either someone on a vision quest, a journey where they fast for 16 days. And they go over there and talk to the frogs. And, you know, when you haven't eaten for 16 days, you could have a lot of vision. So they go over there and they learn from the frogs and they sing the song and then the rain comes. There's a lot of frogs over there, so people took that as a great, you know, a sign, a great omen. You know, this is where you regard it and you sing the song and then you get rain. Mountains are, you know, they talk about the sacred mountain, and you know what, all mountains are sacred, but all of them have their own stories. And the belief in O'odham is that the mountains make the clouds. If you're sitting under a mountain, or even if you're far away, and the clouds are coming over, it looks like the mountains are making the clouds, and they're stirring them into the air. So here the clouds coming over the mountain. So every mountain in the O'odham really, every mountain makes clouds. So in this song, it's talking about the Frog Mountain, Babatutuak.
Pa pa te ta no wan
Whenever it rains in the desert and the rain has gone away and it's real humid outside, you sit out there and you listen and you hear the frogs over in the wash, and they're, you know, real loud sometimes. For a long time ago, for people to hear that was a great sound. It was what everybody wanted to hear, because then you knew it had rained. Frogs singing their songs. That's the magic that brought the rain. And when the frogs sang their songs, so they're saying to the frog babies, the frog children, to sing their song. In other words, make it rain. Well, they call it the green rainbow, but it's all the colors. Green because the green is the one at the bottom. You start with red on top. Green is at the bottom because people like to see green, because that meant that the moisture in the air was, it had just rained, it was going to rain again. And when everything is green, then that means that it's going to be bearing a lot of food for the people. Then it asked again the frog babies, maybe one of you can sing the beautiful rain songs.
Papatia haria ma piamorina kanya hatam chutong kyo hoteyo aya ma piamorina wohing sa po kaita anya anya hima. Papatia haria ma piamorina kanya hata chutong kyo hoteyo aya ma piamorina ohing sa po kaita anya anya hima. Chutong kyo hoteyo aya ma piamorina wohing sa po kaita anya anya hima. Chutong kyo hoteyo aya ma piamorina ohing sa po kaita anya anya hima.
Danny Lopez is a Tohono O'odham elder who has a profound understanding of the practice of O'odham culture. He has devoted much of his long life to passing his knowledge on to the younger generation in the hope that the relationship of O'odham culture to Sonoran Desert habitat will extend well into future generations.
The land was always considered to be something special. They even used to say that the land was a person. Plants were respected because certain plants give us medicine. As I sit here, I'm looking at all the creosote in front of me, because creosote is one of the plants that we call a medicinal plants. The mesquite, certain areas we get mesquites to build our fences, our ramadas, and the old homes that we used to build. The earth gives us, helps us, so we respect the earth. And also certain plants gave us food, like the saguaro. We eat the saguaro fruit, the choya buds, prickly pear, the wild spinach, those little buds that they're called papago lily. Even off the mesquite tree, we get mesquite bean, the sap, and other things too that help us in other ways. Like there's a certain part of the mesquite that we use to seal our gourd rattles. It was like a glue. And even off the creosote, there's this little thing that forms on there. And even that was heated up and used as a glue. So the plants help us. And so we have a lot of respect for certain plants. We say the saguaro is a person. We were always told that if we don't eat the choya buds, you know, as children, that eat it will cause a flood. You know, when you first eat something of the season, maybe the prickly pear fruit, before you eat the first fruit, you talk to it, you pray to it. Same thing, especially the saguaro fruit. We always do that. We take a little of the saguaro fruit and we place it over our heart and we pray. My elderly mother used to tell us that you have to be industrious, because industriousness, to be a good worker, was something valuable in the old culture. Nobody liked a lazy person, because to be a worker, you were useful to your community, to your family, and to yourself. To be an early riser, because that was a very important value in the old culture, to get up early and to get things done and not to sleep late. Especially during the summertime out here in the desert, got up early and while it was still cool and deep, many of your chores before it got too hot, and then you could rest later on. And you asked for good health, because a long time ago, people lived a healthy life. Their diet was healthy, eating off the land. The animals that we hunted, the rabbit, the pack rat, the mule deer, javelina, and other animals that helped us survive. We simply just didn't go and kill an animal. We killed for our survival. And some people used to say that when you killed the deer, you spoke to the deer spirit to tell why you made the kill, so that we as people can survive.
In the first before Kino came, they did some farm crops like tepi beans and stuff like that. It was a different kind of farming. All the way back to, you know, the Hukam, which were here before, did that, and then we took off of that from there when we came in. But there was always hunting, because people nowadays still hunt rabbits and deers and javelinas and stuff like that to eat, even though you don't really have to, because you can go to the store and buy that stuff. Men just like doing that because it's part of, you know, what it was before. And it's a time for them to spend together, I guess, go out and, you know, hunt. There's sacred things, taboo, and a lot of what they call sta'ubidamati. With regard to the Christian, when you pray to God, to thank God for giving this, in the autumn sense, you don't pray to God or to a god, or you pray to the animal, you know, or to the plant, whatever it is that you're eating, that you're going to nourish me. It's not praying to God for these things that were given to me, but more towards the whatever you're eating right at that time. So if I went out and I killed a javelina, and then I would go, and whatever weapon I used, I would wave over the javelina and say to the javelina that this is why I'm doing this, and you'll be giving us nourishment, and you'll live and properly, and your children, and all this stuff. Thank you for, in a way, thanking for it's giving you life, because in a way, in the autumn, like I said, it's luck. So in a way, you're kind of saying that the javelina wanted to be killed. That's why it showed up at that time.
Rosel de Manuel spent many years of her life devoted to the preservation of the A'odham language in the minds of the young. She recognized that A'odham language reflects the very spirit of place of her people.
You know, our language and our culture are just so intertwined, we can't speak of one without speaking about the other. Having that knowledge of the language and the culture, you know, just serves as the strongest foundation for her. Anything on the autumn, you cannot fail in anything you attempt with all that heritage, that wonderful knowledge of information about yourself and your roots and your family and just everything. All this information, all this background actually defines us as a people, you know, apart from any other race throughout the whole world. We're just knowing that and being proud of it. You just can't go wrong. A lot of our culture and our language, especially for the young kids having children, and they themselves don't know the language for one reason or another, I think we're losing the language and the culture there. I'm gonna make sure, along with some other colleagues that I know, that right now we have more people that have learned to read and write autumn, and that are strong in the culture, and I know that it'll never die out. It'll never die. I, for one, am making sure that that will never happen. Uh-huh.
There's a lot of general, you know, the bird flew this way, and it flew that way, and just like that. There's songs regarding mountains, sacred moments, sacred sites, that are general songs as well. There's songs regarding the games, the different variety of games that we have. There are songs about events, or even dream songs. There's songs regarding like places, and they talk about how the corn grows. That's just a blessing song for that community.
that says, you know, this is what I hope for you, that your corn grows high and you have a lot of crop and stuff like that. There's the regular, what they call kuhina, sikor kuhina, which is just a regular round dance. Those are held, you know, in kind of like in a celebration time. But even in times of death, people hold those because when you dance, you stomp the ground, you make the dust rise. It's your way of grieving for that person. The other social dance would be the gohimri, or the wine feast ceremonial dance. I remember a time we were singing at this one community, and this man came. And he stood beside me, we were singing, and he asked for my rattle, so I gave him the rattle. And he was just, you know, just shaking the rattle in time the way we were. He didn't know the song. He started slowly to learn it, I think, by the time he quit. Then he did it again for the next three songs, which is four songs complete. And after he finished, he shook the rattle, and then he gave it back to me. In the spiritual sense, you know, they usually say don't give your rattle to anybody, because whatever they're thinking, they're going to put those thoughts into your rattle. So you have to clean it out after you finish if somebody else used it. But this guy, whatever, when he was doing it, I understood that he was actually putting good things into my rattle, and he was actually, you know, blessing the song or blessing himself with the song. You know, there's that kind of participation too in the social, in the round dance. That's just basic 1-2 beat.
A couple of hundred miles north of Tohono O'odham is the homeland of the Navajo people, who refer to themselves as the Diné and to their homeland as Dineta. Their homeland straddles the Continental Divide and includes much of the southern part of the Colorado Plateau. We're listening to Heather Begay singing a Navajo song of beauty. The Navajo people traditionally have lived in scattered clusters of hogans, circular structures built of wood and earth, and sometimes of stone. My friend Roy Cady spent his childhood in such a hogan, situated on a mesa overlooking the San Juan River. His grandfather was a respected hatali, or medicine man. Roy himself continues to herd sheep and is recognized as a talented male Navajo weaver and community leader. Roy invited me to visit the hogan of his childhood and to record him talking about the significance of sheep and weaving to Navajo culture. I used excerpts from this interview in a sound collage that I produced for Trex, the Traveling Exhibition Department of the Museum of New Mexico. We also hear the voices of Alta Begay and Annie Kahn, and a sacred Navajo sheep song sung by Gibson Ghani.
The stories coming from our elders talk about when the animals were created. I think it was Talking God who created the sheep. And he took down some clouds and shaped the body of the sheep. And then he took some willows and stuck them in as the leg of the sheep. And then, of course, he put rainbows as its hooves. He took some plants and placed them in the head of the sheep for the ears. And then he found some rock crystal and placed them in the eyes. And then after that, he blew breath into the sheep. He said, the sheep will come to you at a later time. There's one already that is among you, which is the bighorn sheep that was created earlier. But this sheep will be given to you by a holy person who will bring you this sheep. And when you get that sheep, you will always forever prosper as a people, as a nation. So you must never let that sheep die. Because with the sheep, you will always prosper in life. It will provide you with every everything in life that you'll ever need. And that's why we call our celebration the Sheep is Life celebration. Because to us, sheep is life in every way, even down to the dung. We use it to protect ourselves. Like when we go on travels, you know, you get some sheep dung, bless yourself with it. And you say, I'll always come back here safe and sound. And that's how we protect ourselves with the sheep. And that's why when I bring the youth to the sheep corral and they say, oh, it stinks, you know, and they close their nose. And then I tell them the story about how the bighorn sheep survived all destructions. And then when you get to show them everything that is made with sheep, and they finally get a general understanding, because a lot of them don't know that before, you know, we've made everything from sheep. Not only just the clothing and the shoes and bedrolls and everything, sinew to sew your clothing, and everything was eaten, even inside the hooves. And then the hooves were made into rattles for different ceremonies. The Choro sheep, when that came to us, I guess that was the person that brought the Choro sheep to us, was the holy individual that was supposed to bring it to us. And that's how we acquired the sheep. When Spider-Man, taught his counterpart, which is Spider-Woman, how he used the sky cords and the earth cords to build the loom, and how he constructed the whole thing for her, taught her. And he gave the names to all the tools, and he says, the tools will be called Yode Yane de Shishi. But she says, no, and she changed the names. So for a male weaver, I use the word Yode Yane de Shishi. For a female weaver, she'll call it Yode Altras A Yane de Shishi, which means mixed stones. For me, it's mainly white shell. When you listen to the stories of Spider-Man and Spider-Woman, all my tools were initially made out of white shell. And when she picked up the tools, she named them all of mixed stones, which was even more beautiful too.
When you're weaving, you have to think about your pattern from the middle. You always have to keep your mind in the middle of it. That way, the weaving grows out of the center of your mind, and you can put your prayers in it. You have to spin those warp strings real tight so that they will be strong. They got to be strong enough to hold your prayers.
A lot of times when I start to weave, it takes me back to my sheep herding. Some of my favorite spots where I can take the sheep, and I know the sheep are very happy there because I can feel that. And they spend a lot of time there. And you try to, you know, move them along because you don't want them to eat all the grass. With my weaving, that's what it does. It puts me into a trance state to where I think about a lot of the stories that my grandfather has told me, my mother and my grandmother, about their sheep herding, how it has made them feel they've learned through the sheep what life is all about. So it takes me to these places. It's very meditative to me, very soothing. When you hear that pounding noise, it reminds me of the earth's heartbeat. When the looms were structured, they took the horizons and they took the sky cord and the earth cord and fastened the loom together. They took the rain streams and did the warp strings. And then they took the lightning and fastened the top beams for tension. And so when the comb was made, it was white shell that made the comb. I think a lot about how the stories are told, the traditional way, how weaving was given to us, also as a protector, also as a way of life for us. That's what I think about when I weave.
My mother weaves. Even today, that's kind of her favorite weaving that she does. I always remember, you know, my father having set up blankets. I guess there's a sense of there's a sacredness about it. Because, you know, it goes back to people using them on their horses. The horses being transportation and kind of like the spiritual healer in a lot of the ceremonies too. The saddle blanket kind of goes along with that. It's kind of a sacred thing if somebody makes it for you. Maybe you're going to a squaw dance or something. There's a pride about it. And so I know that that's something that the Navajos have held sacred for many generations. And I always remember seeing them in my family. I think that the designs mostly are in the edges. Usually it's really plain, like white colors mostly, and the designs around the borders mostly is the storm patterns. I think that kind of goes along with the energy of the horses too. The patterns is kind of related to that. That's how I've been taught by my mom, to kind of put some of the energy force into. So that's why the storm patterns are used.
My grandmother always used to weave saddle blankets for my grandfather. She was not only happy to weave a new saddle blanket for him, but she always said that she left either a pollen knot, a strand of her hair, and also sometimes some hummingbird feathers, just for safe travel, so that the horse can also be as swift as the hummingbird, and that he will always come back to me, she said. And that's why she did that. The saddle blankets, a lot of them were just in band, just corner designs at that initial time, because a lot of our weavings back then were coming from, again, from the creation stories of the four blankets that were woven initially when Spider-Man taught Spider-Woman how to weave. She wove four blankets of the different directions, and each one was a directional color, and each design had a different meaning. That's how a lot of the saddle blankets were woven. There were some of them were just plain feel in the middle. It was a tool for the horse and the rider. It was a protection for them. It was so that they can always come home safe, and that the horse and the rider will always be healthy and strong and endure wherever they go. One of the songs that my grandfather used to always sing right before he rode off kind of went somehow like, Shiliye aneye aneye aneye, Shiliye aneye aneye, Shiliye aneye aneye aneye, Shiliye aneye aneye.
The sacred quality of landscape and all living creatures is recognized by traditional indigenous peoples. The sense of the sacred is embodied in the mythic process and is thus woven into the fabric of culture. It is through the lens of mythic perspective that traditional culture bearers remain intuitively open to their place within the flow of nature. The Lore of the Land is sponsored by the Museum of New Mexico Foundation and the New Mexico Humanities Council, with funding from the National Endowment for the Humanities and the continuing support from the Ford Foundation. For the Lore of the Land, this is Jack Leffler. Thank you for listening.